Well, hello there, wonderful teachers. I want to invite you to an event we're doing this summer. It's in Cincinnati, Ohio, so you have to be able to make it there, but it might be worth traveling for if you're able to. It's happening on July 20th and 21st, so that's over a weekend, and it's going to be the best 2 days for teachers. We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to learn a lot about pedagogy and creative teaching and business. We have two fabulous guest speakers, and we're even going to finish with an optional Ceilidh. That's an Irish dancing party. So I hope you'll be able to join me. Just go to vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. That's .com/TURBO24. The numbers 24. I hope you'll check it out. View all the details there, and I hope to see you in Cincinnati in July. On with the episode.
Vibrant
music teaching.
Proven and practical
tips,
strategies,
and ideas
for music teachers.
This is the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I'm Nicola Canton, and today we're talking about what music lessons would look like if it were easy for the student. Well, welcome back, lovely teachers. So good to be back with you again. Today's episode, I'm sharing a conversation, a chat we had on our YouTube live show recently about easiness in lesson, creating ease, different strategies for making things feel easy for the student. I hope you'll enjoy listening into this little chat, especially if you didn't catch it the first time on YouTube. And if you do, please come say hi, tell me about your experience with it. Or if you disagree with me, come tell me that as well. The best place to catch me normally is on Instagram. We're at Colourful Keys over there. Hello, gorgeous, wonderful, and amazing teachers. Welcome to another Vibrant Music Teacher Chat. This is the weekly show here on YouTube where we talk about things music teachers care about, and we also just hang out together and have fun watching live, or if you're on the replay, hanging out in the chat afterwards as well. So today we're going to be talking about the question, what would this look like if it were easy, when it comes to our actual lessons and from a student perspective rather than in our business? Because that's a question I ask a lot for my own business and things like that. But more recently, I've been thinking about it more in lessons, and it's given me a new perspective on several things. So we're going to be discussing that. Just a couple of little bits of news. The first one is a tentative piece of news. It's a sneak peek behind the scenes, which is that it does look like, can't promise yet, but it's looking pretty good for us going ahead with our in-person event this summer. Probably, but not definitely, in Indianapolis. Now, if you're on our email list, when we release the tickets and everything, I will go into detail of why I've picked there and what exactly it's going to entail. But if you've been thinking about plans for your teacher training this summer, it looks like we're going to be able to do that, hopefully the last weekend in July. That's all penciled in, but it's starting to firm up. So I'm really excited about that. I hope some of you will be able to make it. I understand the location won't work for everyone, but that would be true no matter where we did it. So that's the compromise that we're probably going with at the moment. One more piece of news before we get there, which is about Vivid Practice. So those of you who are using Vivid Practice may have already seen, but if you haven't checked it out lately, there's a video that went up on YouTube yesterday with some of the latest updates and features. Not going to go through them here, just going to flag that there's some new stuff going on and a lot of really exciting releases in the features department of our Vivid Practice app, which is our practice app that you use with students and you use to organize your assignments and everything. There's some fantastic updates, so go check out that YouTube video after this one. And with that being said, let's dive in to our main topic. So, easiness. What does it mean to you? Because sometimes saying we want music lessons to feel easy, music teachers can take it the wrong way. They can think that we're saying that there's no work going into it, right? Or we might even have gripes about current generations, different generations, and how everything has to be easy and nothing, nobody has any grit. But I've been thinking about this question of ease a lot recently. I do find that some of my students, more of my students, are getting more easily overwhelmed, I don't think it's a generation thing or even a technology thing. I do think it might be a hangover from the pandemic and spending so much time not in a school setting over that time. Maybe. I've no research on that, but certainly I've noticed an uptick in the number of students who just get really overwhelmed when there's even a few new elements going on. Some don't, but more do recently. So let me know if you've seen that as well. But beyond even that, the last several years, I've been thinking a lot about our neurodivergent students and how we teach them. I had a presentation that I put together for the APTA conference in Alberta, Canada, and it was about your neurodivergent teaching toolkit. And that's something that I've been putting together for a while, is this toolkit of lots of different ideas and hopefully continuing to add to it. And the point really of that toolkit is that it's actually for everyone. If you don't have all those tools, your neurodivergent students are going to really struggle in many cases because they need different modes, different ways of learning. They need it. But even your neurotypical students can benefit from it, right? So you might not notice the lack as much if you have only neurotypical students, but if you added those things on, then you would notice the benefit for them as well, which is where I think taking on neurodivergent students can be so beneficial for all teachers, because you learn these tricks and tools because out of necessity you need them to work with this student. And then you start using them with everyone, and that's where the real magic happens. So all these different tools and bits and pieces, really what I think it boils down to is making it easy for the student. Not presenting them with challenges that are going to feel too challenging, especially in the beginning. So there is an argument to be made for later on in a student's studies. They've been practicing regularly, they have foundational skills, and maybe sometimes you do challenge them on purpose. You push them a little bit. You throw them in at the deep end of a piece and just challenge them to give it a go. Fine. But I'm talking about the other students. I'm talking about the ones who are at the beginning of study or who don't have those core foundational skills for whatever reason. They're transfer students. They haven't developed them. They've been struggling in some areas. Or students who have fallen off the practice bandwagon, because that makes everything feel harder too. So for all of those students, which I'm going to estimate is at least 50% of most studios, beginners, non-practicing students, students who are struggling in chunks of areas that make it so big challenges are too much for them. What would you estimate that to be of your studio? Very roughly. If we include the beginner chunk, what, that's probably like 60 to 70% of my studio, and I don't think that's unusual. So for all those students, I think our goal should be that their pieces feel easy. I want them to leave the lesson not needing too much practice on those pieces, honestly. If they're still a beginner or they're really struggling with practice, the practice should almost just be repeating, you know, what already went well in the lesson, rather than really pushing forward in between lessons. I think that should be our goal, because that makes them more likely to practice regularly, to feel like they have momentum, to feel like they've got it, to feel like they're a musician, to feel like they're good enough. And then once they have those feelings, yeah, they can push it a little bit in practice, they can structure their own practice time a bit more, they can do more of the work outside of lessons. So if we're talking about students who are taking a grade 5 exam, everything should not feel easy. We can't spoon feed everything to them. But I think there's an argument for spoon feeding or making things easy early on. Now, here's the question. How do we do that? How do we make it feel easy for a student who even a very basic piece feels very challenging to them because they're struggling with their reading, even though you've worked on in lots of ways and worked on developing that skill? They find it difficult to read. They find it difficult to focus. There's some kind of issue going on where it's a challenge for them. How do we make it feel easy for them? And I think the answer is in flipping some of what we usually do. I'm going to paint a picture. Let me know if this sounds familiar to you. Quite often with these students, we open up the piece, right? And, you know, it's the next piece in their method book, or it's a piece we've decided to do with them, and we think it's well within their level, okay? And we have them try it. Maybe we do, you know, do the rhythm first, or walk them through right hand, left hand, or something. But we basically have them try it. And then they struggle. And then we step it back and say, okay, let's listen to the piece, or how about I play it for you, or let's go over that rhythm again, let's do this little exercise. So we do that after the struggle has already happened. And again, I think that's kind of fine for students who likely won't struggle with most of their pieces in that way, in that in-depth way. And therefore, we can take a little bit of that risk and let them try it, try to overcome obstacles, because they need to get used to that feeling, right? But if we have a student who we know struggles or is a beginner, so we're not sure how they're going to do, why don't we set it up first so that it is easy? So what could we do? We could prepare by singing the piece together, right? We could sing it in solfa. We could sing the words. We could make up our own words. We can sing the letter names. We could sing it in numbers, like scale degree numbers, whatever we like. We could do that with a backing track or with us playing it, or just a cappella. What else could we do? We could dance. So we play the piece, or we play a recording of the piece or a backing track, and we do a dance together that maybe highlights some aspect of it. This is something that we talked a lot about in the course I did recently with Paul Myatt, and he specializes in whole body learning, is what they call their approach. So doing movement activities that highlight some aspect of that music, be it the shape of the melody, if that's what we need to highlight, or the rhythm, or the different articulations, or whatever's going on. Maybe we drum it. That's different to just clapping it out. It's more interactive. It makes you treat it more as music. So maybe you have a tambourine and your student has a regular drum, castanet, whatever you have on hand, like just a couple of percussion instruments, and you work on that. One of you does the right, one of you does the left, you swap. Then maybe they try and do both at the same time. They'll probably giggle about that. They probably won't find it like, oh, this is too hard, because it's kind of a bit silly. Maybe you play it on air piano, right, while listening again to the track, or just silently playing on air piano. Maybe you play lots of games to prepare them for whatever concept is in that, even if they've met it before. There's nothing wrong with priming a student for the interval of a fourth, even though they've done games with that before, and maybe it was a while ago. If you know that the fourths in this piece are going to be the challenging part, you do a game that works on intervals of a fourth to set them up for success with analysing that piece. Maybe you do it on a paper keyboard. This is something we do a lot, especially in my Piano Launchpad curriculum, which is our beginner group curriculum with no practice requirement. We have them tap out on a paper keyboard a lot. This takes a lot of the pressure off, because once you're at a piano and you're playing real notes, you play wrong notes, and for some students, that makes them have a reaction, or they feel like, oh, I'm getting it wrong, can't do it. Whereas when you just tap the wrong area on a paper keyboard, most students don't really beat themselves up about that. They don't really mind getting it wrong, and you can just go over it until they get the feeling of it, and it helps them practice with the fingers and the coordination as well. You could also lay out the notes on the piano. So get little erasers, you know, I love my little animal erasers, or any little thing that fits on the piano keys and won't slip between them, and have them lay out the notes they're going to use. Maybe it's a piece that shifts positions, so you have them lay it out, you know, the D major shape, and then it switches to C or whatever happens, and they move the little tokens in that way. Or maybe you have them tap it on both knees. Simple strategy, but it works to help with a lot of coordination. If we can't tap the rhythm correctly, how are we going to play it when notes and pitch are also involved? An extra step for that I really like is to tap it and then play with one note in each hand, so like A and A or whatever, and just play the rhythm as it's written but just on two notes, and then switch to the actual notes. Or you could do, you do the left hand, they do the right hand, and then you switch with them. You could improvise using the concepts in the piece, so if it's like all steps, maybe you improvise and they can only do steps, or if it uses intervals of a sixth, maybe that's in your improv, right? You can take some element that's going to be challenging and put it into improvisation, or you could get them to compose using some element of the piece that might be challenging or is new to them, like the key signature or the rhythm pattern or whatever else is going on. Now, I've just thrown loads of ideas at you. I've done that on purpose. because I want to illustrate, and you could keep going, like there's other ways to prepare for a piece. I want to illustrate how much you can do before you touch playing the piece as it's written. You can do so much. And if you do it this way around, if you do enough of this for that particular student, and that'll take some experimentation, but if you set it up in enough ways, then when they sit down to play the piece, it's not a problem, and it feels easy. And then they're motivated to play it again, to play it at home, to continue learning piano in general, because it felt easy. They felt like, I've got this, I'm good at this. And we need that feeling to motivate us to keep going, especially at the beginning of a new skill, or as I say, when we've fallen off the practice, when we're feeling demotivated. We need to feel like we're good at it, like we can get there if we try, right? And having really big challenges is often not the best route to that feeling. So let me know if this is good food for thought for you, because this is something that I'm working on a lot lately, is how do I set things up so that I don't have that moment where I have to say, oh, no, hang on, or, ooh, okay, I guess this is a bit tough, maybe we'll try it like this. I've been working on this for years, but this is just my new way of thinking about it. How could we make everything easy for students? And then you can scale it back and not everything is easy, but start from, what if everything went smoothly? How could I ensure that that is the case? Now, I'm going to talk about the elephant in the room, because I talked about a lot of different ways of teaching there, and you might be thinking that this takes a lot of planning, and I'm afraid you would be right. It does. You can't just rock up to a lesson, especially when you're new to this stuff, and come up with a way to sing it and dance it and drum it and airplay it and all of this stuff and games and everything without planning a little bit. But if you start doing this, and you could start, there's a couple of ways to start. You could start by coming up with a few ideas for ways to prepare for pieces that you teach a lot, like a method book you use a lot. Or you could start with one particular student, like a particular student you know would benefit from this approach. Start with them and start preparing for just their pieces. Yes, one student's getting different treatment than the others, but it's going to help you to get better at coming up with these things. Then eventually, you will be able to come up with new stuff on the fly as well. Any questions, let me know. Even if they're off-topic, you know we welcome off-topic questions as well. But I really want you to think about this idea of ease and how we can bring it into our lessons. Serena said, what if a student wants everything to feel easy in lessons, but always wants it to play it on the piano straight away? The thing is, I'm not letting them, because they haven't even seen it, right? So this is where the preparation comes in. We don't get to open up the book, open up the piece, and say, okay, how about we clap this first? Let's move away from the piano and sing it. Because that's where your student can go, I just want to play it. If we prepare, we can do all that singing and stuff without them feeling like they have the option to play it at the piano. Does that make sense? So maybe I'm using the book, but we're sitting on the floor before I've even opened it, and then we're singing it together. Or maybe I memorize the tune and we sing it together by rote, no book involved. Do you get what I'm saying? It's not an option. I don't have a student, this has never happened when I'm taking this approach, because it's not there. It's not on the stand before we start these different ideas. Yeah, adult students, absolutely. They can be shyer with some things like the movement and the singing, but you might be surprised, some adults will go for it, absolutely. Juliet said whole body learning, that's what that stands for, it really does work. Preparing the student well before they come to play it on the piano, and hey presto, they can play it straight away. Yes, absolutely. I will just say, I talked about whole body learning earlier because, you know, I had the recent course with Paul Myatt, and I'm not diminishing anything to do with that at all. I'm going to just put it out there that anytime I bring up this stuff, no matter what I would call it or what the other person would call it, normally at least a few teachers say, oh, that sounds like such and such. That sounds like whole body learning. That sounds like integrated teaching, Paul Harris. That sounds like Orff, that sounds like Kodai, that sounds like Delcroze. Yes, it does. And it's not because anyone is ripping anyone off. It's because it's the right answer. That's kind of how I see it. If so many different educational philosophies and things came at sort of almost the same idea, there's some truth in it. Gordon, I didn't list Gordon there. That sounds like Gordon. Do you get what I'm saying? So I'm not saying it's not whole body learning. Whole body learning is absolutely what it is. It's also all these other things as well, in a way, because a lot of us are saying the same thing. Like, my approach to this comes from experimenting myself, yes, and also partially Kadai training I've done. But it could have come from these other sources, right? And then combining that with improv and games and the things that I do. And yeah, that's where we come to this. Are we talking about spending one lesson on just one piece? Good question, Michelle. Sometimes is the answer. Okay, so if I have a student, I'm thinking of one student right now who has ADHD and multiple potential other diagnoses, kind of a complicated situation, and they don't practice. So in that case, in a way, maybe, because yes, we're doing other things in the lessons, like pieces they've done before and different games that have nothing to do with the particular piece we're doing that at that moment or whatever. But in terms of introducing a new piece, one is enough for 1 week, for sure, because they're not going to practice it and it's going to be challenging enough as it is. With other students, no, not necessarily. Like, this is where I'm talking about experimenting with lots of different things and gradually getting to know your student and work with them, because one preparation activity is enough and will make the difference for them to feel like this is pretty easy. For others, they might need 3 or 4. And they might need those spaced over last week and this week. So we prepared them last week. Maybe we prepare again today. They don't even know what we're doing. We're just doing a singing activity or a movement activity. They don't know it's for a specific piece. And then 2 weeks later, they meet the piece on the sheet music. Right? So it can be kind of mixed together in that way. It could be one piece in 1 week. It could be several. And it could come in layers. Do I have ideas that come to mind for adults? Yeah, absolutely. I think if you do have an adult that's a bit shy about some of this stuff, I think having backing tracks is a great thing to have, because then they feel like they have support. So if you're asking them to sing along, you put on the backing track, you also sing, so they don't feel like they're on show. Not all adults will feel like that. Some adults will be happy to sing, right? I'm just putting it out there because it may be an issue. Again, if you have the backing track and you're thinking about movement and dance, maybe you do let it be a seated thing. And, you know, you're just giving them movements with their hands. That's often more comfortable for adults. But I wouldn't rule out just saying to them, hey, I know this seems a bit silly, but it really works. So we just go with me for a few minutes. Just try this. And usually they'll just go with you, depending on their personality. What did you think of my Film Yourself February? It was so nerve-wracking to post, but I'm glad I did. Kept watching, thinking, what would other teachers say? Oh my gosh. Well, I replied to you, so I think it's fantastic. I especially think it's fantastic that you did it at all, because I've been doing this special highlight on teachers posting videos of their own teaching, and not everyone will do it. Only a few members will do it. And that's because, yeah, it's finding time to do a new thing. Like, I get all the other reasons, but often it is because it's nerve-wracking. So mostly I want to say kudos for posting it at all. And also on that judgment thing, I think a lot can change for us when we realize that people aren't judging us. And that's not to be like wishy-washy or overly positive about it. But the truth is, for most people, let's say we're in a room at a conference, right? I'm going to this conference soon. Most people in that room are not thinking about you. Even if you think you just did something super embarrassing, like you just fell over or whatever would be embarrassing for you. Falling over isn't embarrassing to me. I do it all the time. But I'm trying to think of an example because I'm not easily embarrassed. Something you think, everyone's looking at me. The thing is, they barely gave you a moment's thought, most of the time. Nobody cares, because they're thinking about what others are thinking about them, most of the time. That's an oversimplification, but yeah, I would just say, people judge less than you think, and it's always of benefit, I think, to put yourself out there when you're in a safe community like VMT is, so that you can receive different comments, or you can just look at it yourself and feel what it's like to put it out there and put your teaching on show. And I think more people should be doing this. Including teaching videos in the membership was something that I did very early on and something I was very passionate about doing, because not because my teaching is amazing, because it's not, almost, because I wanted to show teachers, hey, this is what actual teaching looks like. Because a lot of the teaching demos you see out there, the videos people actually post in general, are perfection. Maybe the student is entirely prepared, right? They've already done this material. It's not real teaching. And what I want to show is real teaching. And I just want to commend you for showing real teaching, because students don't always get exactly what we're trying to say, and things don't go as smoothly, and we don't always have the exact right words. But that's reality. And if other teachers get to see that, they feel less alone, they feel more confident, and you can look at it and you can improve from it as well. I agree. Good for you taking this step to even do it. I finally remembered to make a short video yesterday, and we'll take a look today and maybe share it. Please do, Laura. I would love for you to share it. Please, please do. It is scary in the beginning, I'm not going to lie. It's scary to even look at it yourself, and then you think about sharing it, and you're always going to be nitpicking your own everything, right? Whatever it is for you, whether it's the way you speak or the way you look or the way you taught it or what your student said or the room you're in, I don't know. People always have a hang up about something. But other teachers need to see real teaching, because the days of things being behind closed doors and everyone questioning themselves constantly should be behind us in this age, because we can share with each other what it looks like in reality. Yeah, that's fair enough, Julie. As I said, there could be many other reasons. I'm not trying to say everyone must do this, because that's not going to be reality. Some people don't have time. Some may have they have to set up the technology. They may not have permission forms yet from parents, whatever. But think about adding it in the future if you haven't managed to do it during February, because it is just so valuable for you, for your own professional development, aside from sharing it with teachers and how great it is for them to see as well. Okay, Laura, yeah, we have three Facebook groups technically, so I'll just explain. The VMT Clubhouse is only for members, so I would consider that quite private. If you're talking about the actual Facebook setting, they're all the setting where you have to be in the group to see what's in the group, right? So none of them are just open. The Vibrant Music Studio Teachers group is it's a larger group of teachers. It's not restricted to members. And then I mentioned we have three because we also have the one for Vivid Practice. Glad you think so, Laura. Glad you enjoyed it. Oh yeah, we'll get that through soon. Sometimes we fall behind a little bit because we do have to manually vet those to see if you're a member and stuff. Okay, thank you all for joining me. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. I hope you'll continue to think about what it means to make things easy for your students. As a parting thought, the next time your student has a struggle, they're really not getting the piece, they feel like they're giving up with it, or you're feeling a lack of grit with them at sticking to it, or something that's not going right, or they learned it the wrong way and you have to correct it and it feels frustrating. Not right in that moment, but later, write a few notes for yourself. How could you have prepared them even more? Because there's always an extra way to do it. Not in a way to beat yourself up, but just to say to yourself, what could I have done that would have been even more preparation to give them a better chance of not being frustrated by that piece? Okay, so I'll leave you with that. Thank you all for joining me. I hope you have a fabulous week, and we'll see you next time. One of the awesome benefits for Vibrant Music Teaching members is that they get an exclusive member magazine every month. This magazine brings together our blog articles in a way that is digestible and super actionable. If you want to become a member and get the magazine as well as all the other benefits, you can go to vmt.ninja to sign up. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I hope you loved it, and I wanted to pop on here one more time to remind you about our event. It's happening in Cincinnati this July, and you can get all the details at vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. See you there.